Folks said that I would change my mind. I'd straighten up and do just fine. Ah, but I still love rock and roll. I keep on rolling with the flow.
Welcome back to the Jeff Porch Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Thursday morning. 251-343-0106. Text line. That's how you get in touch with the program if you want to respond to anything you are hearing this morning. Joining us now on the line, always a pleasure to bring on my next guest. He's running for re-election in a tough, tough dogfight of a race in Montgomery, but wanted to make time for State Representative Charlotte Meadows this morning. Representative, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Jeff. It's great to be with you today. It's a beautiful day, and it's actually a lovely time to be campaigning. So we're happy to be able to be getting out there.
Yeah, well, I can imagine the heat of the summer, and you know, especially these municipal elections and some of these primaries, obviously. But now it's finally, I guess, more conducive for a especially if you're knocking on doors, I assume.
Well, and that's been our main strategy thus far, is to get out and knock on the doors of the people in District 74. I've got 8 precincts that every person who votes in those precincts is in District 74. And so we're just trying to get out and knock on as many doors and explain to them the importance of this race and really what I'm all about. I think everybody knows I have four new precincts. So those are people that maybe had not had the chance to meet in the past, although it's amazing how many of those people I grew up with, because it's actually the neighborhood I grew up in here in Montgomery. So it's the Vaughn Road Church of God precinct, and right off Vaughn Road, which my home. It's been fun. But honestly, the weather this week, I'm like, okay, I can keep doing this for another 6 weeks, because it's been really nice. The weather's been perfect, and you just get almost really energized or re-energized when you have cooler weather, and it's pleasant, and the sun is bright and shiny, and you crunch through the leaves when you're walking up to doors, and you get to see all the fall decorations. I mean, I've had some beautiful front doors to knock on, so that's been great.
I mean, you're obviously in, I think, probably the most competitive. You, Senator Butler, maybe I hear is a tough race, but I think he'll probably prevail in North Alabama. But talk about that. I mean, obviously being in one of the – you don't have that many competitive districts in Alabama. But in that situation, what do you hear from people? What when you talk to them, what are they bringing to your attention?
You know, it's interesting. A lot of the people are just – really happy to meet me and happy that I've come by and stopped and introduced myself. But I think when I talk to them about the issues that I'm, you know, focused on and wanting to bring up and work on in the legislature next year, those issues really resonate with the voters. I mean, I'll tell you what they are. I've got 3 main ones, but I mean, I've not had a single person said, "Oh no, I wouldn't want to do that. But it's interesting. And one of the ones we mentioned first is I really would like to see us, and I'm planning on working on eliminating the sales tax on groceries, the state sales tax, which of course is just 4%. But hey, in this world, when you know milk's twice what it used to be, and eggs are, you know, everything's just skyrocketing at the grocery store, I think everybody understands that if we can return some of that money back to the people in the form of, you know, just eliminating that sales tax, that would be very helpful. So that's a big one. Of course, is another one that I'm very interested in is school choice. I'm actually working with LSA now, Legislative Services Agency, to try to start getting legislation written similar to what Arizona passed. There was an interesting article that quoted Governor Ducey from Arizona saying, "Now, every other state can take this bill and just replace the word Arizona with their state's name and then carry it." So I sent that to my friend at LSA, Karen, and said, "Karen, can we really just take out Arizona and put Alabama in?" So we've been going back and forth looking at that, and it's really not quite that simple. Of course, nothing really never ever is, but she's looking at that, and we're exploring how we can do that in Alabama. And that really seems to make even people who would never use school choice feel like it's the right time for parents to be able to choose what school works best for their child.
And You said you had three, so that's two. Am I missing one, or did I?
Okay. Oh, yeah. The third one. Sorry. The third one is, and I think this kind of relates back to my pro-life stand, is we need to make sure that adoptions are as simple and easy and as inexpensive as possible. And for some reason in Alabama, the law requires, for one thing, it's very expensive, and it's not that way necessarily in other states. But the other thing is that we have a lot of requirements for an adoptive family that may or may not be as important as somebody thought they were at one time. For example, adoptive parents are required to make sure that their whole family knows how to swim. And I'm totally in favor of teaching children how to swim. But if you don't have a swimming pool and you never go to the lake or the beach, I'm not sure that teaching swimming is the end-all be-all to be able to adopt a child. And that's also a little discriminatory, in my opinion, because honestly, Black people really don't swim a lot. So, I mean, it's just, I don't know that should be a major requirement. Anyway, there's several things like that have come to my attention. I'm like, why is that a part of our law? It probably goes back a long time ago to something that somebody put in there, and you know, it just may or may not be the most important thing anymore.
A lot of antiquated elements of our adoption laws in Alabama. And I guess if we're a pro-life state and we're going to, limit or prohibit abortion under most circumstances, then you got to give back on the other side if we're expecting, right? I mean, that's always the anticipation.
Correct. And we can certainly support the pregnancy resource centers, and I do, and hopefully those who are strongly pro-life do as well. But we also need to make sure that the mother has the resources. And that's actually what the bill that I carried this past year, the Every Mother Matters Act, was going to make sure that the women knew what resources were available to them. But going forward, we definitely need to make sure those resources are still available and they understand what they can utilize. Of course, we've increased the Medicaid from, I guess it was, I don't know, 6 weeks or something to a full year after a child is born. And that will help. I mean, there's no doubt that having health care for that newborn is important. The first year they go to the doctor every 2 months, 2, 4, 6, 9, and 12. So they go 5 or 6 times during that first year. And of course, babies get sick and you need to be able to take them in and make sure that they're thriving. So it's very important for the mother to have the reassurance that she has Medicaid for her baby. So that's something that we've already done. Certainly don't need to do that again, but we need to keep it in place. So that's another thing that's.
Joined by State Representative Charlotte Meadows here on the program. Representative, you got kind of a target on you. I think the Teachers Union, the AA, others, they don't like some of your ideas on education policy. Has that made it more difficult? I mean, does it seem like that's a headwind working against you?
I mean, yeah, it might look that way, but I mean, I do believe that the Teachers Union and the AA is really focused on improving education. I hope that that's really their end game, and we just maybe have a different strategy about how to go about doing it differently. I do believe that giving parents choices tends to, well, and national data shows that when you introduce school choice, that all schools improve, not just the school of choice, but the traditional schools, the public schools, they all start to improve because of competition. And anybody that's ever taken a basic economics class knows that when things are competitive, everybody improves. Rising tide floats all boats. So that's why I think, and you know, when parents are involved in making that decision, then you have what's called parent engagement. And everybody knows that parent engagement is critical to the success of the school. So I do think, I look forward to working with the teachers union this next year. I've heard that they've, are making some strategic changes in the way they do things. I hope that's accurate. I haven't talked to them about this next piece of legislation, but I don't have anything in writing yet. So I expect to get that tomorrow. I look forward to bringing.
Yeah, and you mentioned that. One of the things I've heard, and I'm sure that this is an AA, a teachers union, that at least They look at the reality of the circumstances that this is now, Alabama's now a Republican state. And I think their approach is this. We're no longer Paul Hubbard and Joe Reed's AEA. We're conservative friendly. I mean, a lot of us in this space of pro-school choice look at that and say, well, you know, I'm still shell-shocked from the 1990s and 80s and before. But you sound like you're at least a little optimistic that they may be coming around.
Well, I'm optimistic about the teachers union and the AEA, but I'm also optimistic about the legislature because we have a number of new people that are coming to me saying, I want to help you with that. I want to be a part of what you're working on. And those new people, you know, yeah, they're going to be new to the state house, but they'll have a voice and they have as much vote as anybody else does. And I think at the end of the day, well, we can say, okay, really, what is best for Alabama? What is the best thing for our children in our state? And also, what's best for the teachers and the parents? I mean, you got to look at all of it. But if we're going to improve as a state, if we're going to grow, if we're going to really have the workforce that the governor has said, you know, 500,000 people by 2025, I think. I mean, we're going to have to make sure that the kids we have are actually getting the information in schools that they need and being prepared for workforce or for college or for military service. I mean, we cannot continue to grow our state and not have kids finishing high school that can read. They've got to be able to do read and basic math to be able to get the jobs that we're bringing and that are available.
So, well, on the school choice thing, here's what occurs to me. I mean, like, I know it's Alabama is a very, very diverse, dynamic state. It's not a monolith. But you go to some of these places, some of these rural localities, perhaps, where it's a generational thing. Say, for example, you know, your kids go to this school, you went to the school, your parents went to it, and your grandparents went to it, and it's sort of the centerpiece of the town. It's the, you know, the high school football game. It kind of rallies the town around something. And I think the fear from a lot of these people, maybe it's ginned up a little bit by some of the administrators, the school board, et cetera. They don't like the idea of school choice tampering with their system. You hear that a lot of from some of these places when the school choice conversation is brought up.
Well, and that's true. But if we're not providing what the students need so that when they graduate from 12th grade, they can get a job in today's society, then we're not helping anybody. And you know, the rural schools, there are plenty of opportunities for them to pivot to, and many of them are. I don't want to say that they're not at all, because many of them are. I mean, they're teaching agri-science and they're teaching biomedical and things like that, and they're doing a great job at it. The problem is that every student that's zoned to go to one of those schools, that may not be what they're interested in. And every school can't provide for the specific needs of every student that's zoned to that school system. And that's where I think parents should be able to get the resources to pay to take their child somewhere else. And, you know, people say, well, there's no school choice in my county because all we have is public schools and that's all we've got. We're not going to have any private schools. Well, I guarantee you, if there was a bucket of money out there that private schools knew X number of students would follow with their bucket of money, then private schools would start to pop up around the state. And I'm not talking about they'd have to build a school. There's virtual private schools that would provide whatever that student needs. I mean, there's so much more opportunity for that type of thing that, you know, people that say there's no choice or there's not any opportunity for choice, I think they've missed the boat. They're not thinking clearly about all the potentials.
Last question, we'll get you out of here on this. Whenever we talk about education, I just think there's something's changed in the culture. The government does so much at that grade school level that they feed. In some cases, they teach apparently the birds and the bees in graphic terms and vulgar terms. But so much of that responsibility that's been the traditional role of the parents has been abdicated. And now the schools kind of assume that role, but that parent involvement is still very needed. it seems like there's a cultural problem. Is there necessarily a government fix to that?
And I think parents are at the point where they're taking back their role in providing all that good information for their students. And that seems to be what I'm hearing mostly is parents don't want the government teaching values to their children at whatever age. And, you know, it's really a fine line. You've got to, it's a balancing act because some parents, some kids don't have active parents who are even in the picture. I mean, they're being taken care of by a grandparent or an aunt or an uncle, or, I mean, they're almost, but most parents don't want the teacher or the government bureaucracy teaching their kids the birds and the bees. They don't want them to be involved in their sexual identity. So there is some situations where the student, the only adult in that kid's life is somebody at the school. And the school does have to step in and help and give guidance. But in most situations, the parents that I'm hearing from and talking to, which are obviously active parents, they don't want the government to be involved in those decisions. And they would just soon there never be a conversation with the student about the birds and the bees and all the other opportunities that are out there for students these days. I mean, there is so much going on in schools, and we really need to be able to focus on teaching and learning the basics, the math and the reading and the science, not the sexual identity issues.
Representative, you're very kind to come on this program. Let's talk again soon, and best of luck to you out there on the campaign trail.
Well, thank you so much, Jeff. It's great to be with you and your listening audience this morning. I appreciate the opportunity.
Thank you for that. We got to get a break in here, guys. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5.
Just glitter and shine. Taught us that.